Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels, and our guest this episode, we've got Tyler Wolden back on the podcast. We had him on last year. Tyler fishes the walleye tournaments over in Minnesota, more specifically the AIM circuit with traveling partner Nate Liniger. This particular podcast, though, is kind of impromptu. We kind of got ourselves together here on short notice because Tyler fished a tournament with his wife, Kate, and had a great finish. That was the Graja over there in Grand Rapids. Many of you are going to be familiar with the Graja on Lake Pokegama, a very, very popular, very competitive walleye tournament over there in Minnesota. And Tyler gives us the full breakdown of he and Kate having a great, great finish over there. And he's a great stick. This is a very fun story to listen to, but also full of great information. So let's get to it here. We got Tyler Wolden. The Onyx Fish App is the roadmap to your next great fishing adventure. The Onyx Fish App brings together all the great research tools that we talk about all the time on the JMO podcast with all the top pros. I'm talking about satellite imagery, lake surveys, fisheries data, contour maps, the list goes on. They're all in one place now. Anglers in the Midwest have never had a more valuable research tool at their disposal. Head over to the website to subscribe today. Use promo code JMO for a discount at checkout. And I'll say it again, your next great fishing adventure that you don't even know exists can be found on the Onyx Fish app. Devil's Lake is one of North Dakota's premier outdoor recreational destinations. And to find out more about what the lake and the community of Devil's Lake has to offer, head to devilslakend.com and get all that. We're talking about the lodging and restaurant options and just the lay of the land and everything going on in the community. There's all kinds of stuff all summer long going on in and around the community of Devil's Lake. That link is in the description. So let's get into it here, man. What's the update?
Yeah, it's 2025. Yeah, we chatted last year for quite a while. But yeah, I know it's 2025 was a highly anticipated year for myself and, you know, my main partner, Nate Liniger, and then our team. You know, the guys that have been on for Joe and Dylan, Mackie, Randy Topper, Chuck Hossie. So I guess to kind of start off the year, you know, this is how tournament fishing goes. Like, all right, every year it's like, all right, what are we doing? Are we sticking with AIM? Are we going to NWT, you know, MWC, or what are we going to do this year? So this year was kind of weird. We kind of had a hinkling to maybe jump into the NWT and give that a go this season, even with a tough schedule. Like, you know, you're not getting any younger, right? And I look at it as, you know, I do this fishing stuff. Obviously, I started off fishing because it's fun, it's competitive, and I love the sport. But now it's kind of transitioned more into, like, I'm doing this for my family, my son, my daughter, to give him something to look up for, you know, forward to and look up to. You know, so that's kind of what we're like, all right, maybe we'll do NWT. So our first one of the season was NWT out in Lake Sharp there. And we had a really good showing. I'm sure you did some coverage on that, plenty of coverage on that, but like Nate took second, Randy took third, Joe took fifth, and then I think Chuck cashed a check, and then Dylan and I were just out of the money. So it was a great experience. Loved that event. It was super fun. The NWT's well ran. Just, you know, the rest of the season was kind of up in the air, and the schedule is just so tough for us and our families that we decided to go back to AIM. I'm kind of getting chatty here, but.
Well, but, you know, you guys stick together pretty good. I mean, that's part of it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, like there's sort of a theme there. Anytime I talk to any of you guys, you know, one thing I like about you guys is that you've got that camaraderie going on. But yeah, you guys like to kind of stick together. If the majority of you can't do it, you know, it's, you know, you guys will kind of move and groove together.
Well, and you gotta look at, like, we always look at it as, you know, you can't win a war without an army. And these six, well, five other guys, we're not an army. We're like six SEAL team snipers. You know what I mean? We work so well together. We all have great insights and huge work ethics. And it's just one of those things where it's just, we can't break it up. I mean, we just got such a good thing going that we just keep plugging through. So, you know, going on through that, then once we decided to go back to AIM, one of the main reasons is AIM's coming out with, I'm sure you've heard this, the NXT series next season. So that's a huge opportunity, and we love AIM. We've been true to AIM for many years, and we're like, let's stick with it. And you know, so we're doing the full season AIM, shooting to qualify for the NXT next season, and go full on that. And then obviously the national championship again. So so with AIM, we went back to that. And the first event was on Leech Lake. Nate, my partner, and I, we won that one. So that set us up great for, you know, team year points, obviously. And then we moved on to Mille Lacs. We had good finishes there. Dylan and Joe won that one, as you know. Nate and I were top something. I can't remember off the top of my head, but we got good points off of Mille Lacs there. So we're in first place team of the year as it stands now. Done a couple local tournaments. And then now we have, just to go through what we have the rest of the season, will be Ames on Otter Tail, you know, my home body of water growing up, on a couple weeks. And then we go up to Vermilion, which is a great body of water. And then championship is on Cass Lake. And then we do that MWC Cass Lake as well. So, but that kind of brings us to, you know, the last tournament, Graja, where I fished with my wife, Kate. And what an amazing event. Amazing event.
You've fished tournaments with her before. I mean, you've posted some. You've won tournaments together, whatever. She's caught a lot of walleyes.
Yeah.
So and I think that is like super cool. And at some point in time, you know, if this wasn't such a timely thing, like I was saying before we even recorded, I was like, man, you know, if I'd have like known that, you know, we were going to do this ahead of time, like I would have tried to, you know, get on her schedule too and just kind of fit her into this, because, you know, her perspective would probably be pretty fun too. But you'll have to kind of speak for the team here. But mm-hmm. I want to get the whole story on the Graja. And like from my, you know, on my side, I've kind of maybe like quietly, I'm sure I've mentioned it in the past before and talked to guys, you know, sort of a little bit about it before, but that is one walleye tournament that's, you know, kind of outside of the circuits, like outside of the Ames and outside of the NWT and the MWCs, that like, that is one of the, like, notoriously, as I'm realizing, like one of the toughest. That is it's a very interesting lake, and it's a super competitive field of anglers, and it's like kind of notoriously a tough bite. I kind of want to get all of that, like from your perspective of like how many times you've fished it, and kind of what you, kind of how you view that Graja, how competitive that tournament is and that lake is, and just kind of how that all came about coming onto your schedule. You know, even before we get into the fishing part of it, because I think, I mean, it's a great tournament.
Yeah. I mean, it's a unique tournament, right? I mean, it's been going on for many years, and there's only a select amount of tournaments that are like that, you know, in Minnesota. You know, I would consider it to be like the Governor's Cup of Minnesota, really. Look at like,
yeah. That's like that's a really good way to put it.
Really, it really, you know, it could be transitioned to something like that. I mean, the whole idea of the tournament was to support the Grand Rapids hockey team. So that's what it stems from. And really, I don't know how long it's been going on, to be honest with you, but I'm sure it's got to be 10 years or so. And I've been fishing it now. I wanted to get into it a few years ago, and it's just, you can't get into the tournament. It's like pertinent impossible, you know? So I think it was 4 years ago, four tournaments ago, Chuck Hossie, one of our teammates, his partner had to bow out of it. So there was an open spot for Chuck. Chuck had his registration. He's like, Tyler, let's get in. Let's go. So we fished it for 2 years together. And then last year, Chuck's got a son. He's like 16 or 17. He's wanting to get in the fishing world a little more. And so he decided to fish with his boy, which is totally awesome and all right. So then I was like, well, I had the opportunity then, because I fished it last year for a early registry. So I was able to jump into it with an open spot with my wife, Kate. And we fished it last year, and I think we got like 12th or 11th. We just missed the stage. And then this year, that was a bit of a different story. So
it's catch, photo, release, correct?
Yep.
Which is, you know, that in itself is super fun. And that, it's important to point out also too, because you look at a Minnesota tournament with like the slots and whatnot, and then you look at the weights of the tournament, and you're like, how can they do that? Well, you know, the catch, photo, release and all that, which you fish the Ames, you're well versed on all that. So you're kind of, you know, you're kind of built for it. A bunch of your teammates or a handful of your teammates fish it, which is great. And so it kind of like fits the brand. But talk to me a little bit about the pre-fish and just the fishing, maybe some of the work study going into a lake like this. Like, what are some of the important points to point out? Because everybody says it's a tough bite, yet the weights are always big. So it's mm-hmm. like, I need more to contextualize that.
Yeah, for sure. I'll divulge and dive in as deep as I can. You know, like Randy Topper, he fishes with Brock Anderson, and they're local, the Hang Loose guys. And they grew up on that lake. They guided on that lake and they cut their teeth there. So a lot, I will attest, a lot of our knowledge and understanding does derive from Randy Topper, and Brock, and some of the other guys there. But, just to step back a sec. So that the Graw is actually ran by Ames. So, the Grand Rapids Hockey Association, the team there, not the hockey team, but the, people that run the tournament, they hire AIM to come and facilitate that tournament. So it's exact same rules and regulations that AIM runs in the tournament. And they switched the rules up on AIM this year. So if people aren't clarified or understanding of what's changed, AIM moved to a little bit different on their catch record release type. So used to be able to use two hands and, you know, put the fish on the board there, use two hands like you'd normally measure a fish, pinch the tail and get a length out of it. This year they switched to a one-handed deal. So, you know, you only have one hand on the fish kind of holding it there on you. You just got to hope that fish lays flat for the pictures. It's working really good. The fish are staying healthy. So that's kind of a little backstory to that. But yeah, so the lake is, you know, like Grand Rat or Pekegama is actually a feeder of the Mystic River. So the Mystic River is right there, right at takeoff actually. So I don't know how far away it is from like Itasca State Park exactly where the headwaters is at, but it opens up pretty good there. So I think that's what kind of sets the lake apart between that. There are so many crawfish in the lake. It's similar to Leech where you got zebra mussels and crawfish. So it's super clear. But then it also is like, kind of like some parts of the lake have like algae blooms, like, and that was just starting to happen. And that's usually a key sign that the system's changing from that, you know, that spring minnow bite or like a early, you know, or just after spring minnow bite, jig and wrap bite. And it's kind of transitioning to that bug bite. Like there was some bug hatches going on off and on or on game day. I didn't see it during practice, but game day, I look over to Kate. I'm like, oh boy, look at all those mayfly carcasses and mayflies on top of the water, you know. So there was an adjustment made when that happened. We were fishing in practice. It was a mix between like jigging a crawler, jigging a bobber and a crawler, or jigging a leech under a bobber. And it was really more so like we don't catch a lot of fish during practice unless we have to, right? So we covered a lot of the ground that's been good in years past and just really covered a lot of ground. I think I was there Thursday. I fished a little bit, and then Friday I had a full day, and then game day was Saturday.
So not a big pre-fish.
No, it wasn't. With the work constraints and just family stuff, I was like, I can't put a ton of time in this one. And I know the system, it's not a giant lake. I don't know how many acres it is, but you know, it's not a super big lake, but it fishes kind of big because there's so many walleyes. It's more so about finding the right ones, right? So in practice, I kind of went back to my old haunches from years past and like known spots, and those weren't really playing out great. The fish were set up a little goofier this year. They were like, they kind of got pushed back because we had some weird weather. So fish weren't like floating around off the edges, you know, very visible. A lot of fish were on those weed edges, and it's like, you know, when they would come out, you could get them to eat off and on when you did sample some fish, but there's a lot of like 24s and 25s, and we just, in practice, like our teammates, we got some 28 inchers, but it was just kind of a weird year, right? Sort of backtrack into that, I guess back into the bait side of things, it was like, you know, we had to be really subtle with our presentations. I felt like we couldn't like power fish them very well. We had to like downsize our baits, like, you know, pinching off crawlers smaller. But then it'd be random because like all of a sudden, like they want a full crawler or they want like a 3-inch crawler, you know? So it was like each fish was, and it's, I'll be honest with you, I don't know if you saw John Hoyer's post the other day, but he talked about like these fat, stingy Minnesota walleyes. He's looking forward to getting to the Great Lakes. There's something going on in Minnesota right now where everything is, for big walleyes anyways, is super stingy.
It's like they're all full. It's like they're all so well fed.
Yeah, and like the weather's been weird. You know, I can test to that on Graja, like Pekegama. It was a very goofy bite. And I'm not going to say like I went out there, had the best program in the world, but like some of it was luck and stumbling on the right fish. But it's not like I was saying, like, those fish weren't very visible. Like some of them were, but not the right fish. So it was really like, you know, I slowed a lot of things down, downsized presentations, and I was able to like, you know, scope those fish on those certain weeds that had like a little pocket showing, or like you could just get a little glimpse of them. And then it was kind of a guessing game, right? But I felt like those bigger fish were kind of holding the cover, where the ones that everyone was catching, those 30-pound bags, those were the visible ones. So I used my electronics a lot and like slowed down and then just pretty much threw everything I could at them. You know, on game day, I think we caught like two of them for sure, on a bobber and a leech. I ended up catching a deeper one that was like really tight. The bounce, like a 26 and a half incher, and I could not get it to eat anything. Finally, I put like a half ounce jig on and a jumbo leech, and I just drug that thing on bottom, kind of old school. And I was able to get it to pick it up, and then I got them. And then a couple more early in the morning on bobbers with a jig and a crawler up a really shallow, actually, and like some cabbage. So kind of blasting through all the details fairly quick there, but
no, I love it, dude. I love it. We're covering the ground here, but I definitely like, and I know you kind of, you know, you had some past experience, you know, if you were to say like, you know, outside of the information that you already kind of were working off of, like, how would you go about like breaking down a body of water like that?
Yeah. I mean, that's really, there's two big factors and well, there's a lot of factors, but the two main factors are water temp and time of year. You know, kind of like I mentioned, there's that like that early spring transition from out of the, you know, or like spawning grounds and then weeds, and then, you know, they go do whatever the heck they want wherever they want. And that's where that transition is, that that transition last year, it was, you know, I feel like we're like 2 weeks behind this year, so that's why those weed fish were much more prevalent. But yeah, I mean, yeah. So like water temps were like they dropped down in practice. Like on Friday I was like, man, you know, it dropped down to like 65, you know, from on Thursday when I got a little bit, it was like 68. That's like, you know, midday, you know, temperatures. So game day, the water warmed up to 70 degrees. And I will say during game day, just go back a little bit here, but one of those fish you mentioned, like suspended fish chasing those smell, I did our last fish. We were doing it at 3:30 because we were like boat number 87. So we were in last flight doing at 3:30. And I decided towards the end of the day, I think I want to spend a couple, 2-3 hours close to takeoff just because it's there and I know there's fish in that area. We got three of our good fish out of that area. But the last one we had, I found this fish and it was floating around as like, I think I was in like 24 feet of water just off the edge in this little muddy area. I saw this fish like halfway down and I thought it was a pike at first, and bobber and a leech, I started throwing at it. We had 15 minutes left until we had to be checked in. Yeah. I'm like, well, you know, I might as well just go after this one and see if I can get him to bite. That fish, this is like persistence, right? That fish, first time I casted on it, it came and looked at it, went away. It came and looked at it, went away. I'm like, all right, well, I'm going to reel up, cast again, change my bait out. I went to like a fresher leech. And I think that time I cast on it, it nipped it. And I'm like, oh my goodness, this thing's going to eat. You know, you get one to do something like that, or you hook one, or you lose it, you know, quick, or it nips it like that. You can typically get them to eat if you're consistent and you can get those casts right on them. I don't know how many more casts later, to be honest with you, but it was like maybe like 7 minutes till we had to be checked in, and it ate. And I'm like, oh my goodness, this thing actually ate, and it's a whale. I horsed it in a little more than I usually would. I usually fight them pretty light and let them wear themselves out down deep before they get to the boat. But I horsed it in, and we got that thing on the board, took a picture. It was 28-incher, and we had 3 minutes to get back. Luckily, we weren't far from takeoff, so it took me like a minute to get there, and we had 2 minutes to spare. But, yeah, that fish got us second place. Otherwise, we'd have been probably like in seventh, I think. You know, so,
yeah. The Onyx Fish App is the roadmap to your next great fishing adventure. The Onyx Fish App brings together all the great research tools that we talk about all the time on the JMO podcast with all the top pros. I'm talking about satellite imagery, lake surveys, fisheries data, contour maps, the list goes on. They're all in one place now. Anglers in the Midwest have never had a more valuable research tool at their disposal. Head over to the website to subscribe today. Use promo code JMO for a discount at checkout. And I'll say it again, your next great fishing adventure that you don't even know exists can be found on the Onyx Fish app. Devil's Lake is one of North Dakota's premier outdoor recreational destinations. And to find out more about what the lake and the community of Devil's Lake has to offer, head to devilslakend.com and get all that. We're talking about the lodging and restaurant options and just the lay of the land and everything going on in the community. There's all kinds of stuff all summer long going on in and around the community of Devil's Lake. That link is in the description. Well, let's do a little bit more of a detailed play-by-play on game day. And I want to get a feel for like how you and Kate kind of work together and how, you know, what the discussion is like at takeoff, you know, like figuring out where, you know, you kind of probably got a first spot in mind or a first area in mind, but like, do you have some protocols? Like if you get there and there's four boats kind of on that stretch, like I'm kind of curious, like how that whole, like the whole day, you know, from when you wake up and you're getting, you know, getting the boat in the water, like what are the vibes like and kind of the play by play, fish by fish on tournament day?
Yeah. I mean, I'm a really chill guy. And when it comes to that stuff, I try to keep a really level head, and I've done this for so long now. I still get those, you know, game day nerves and adrenaline and all that, but more so just like go fast in the boat, 'cause I got that freaking rocket ship, you know?
Yeah. You're in the Yarcraft, right?
Yeah. I'm in a Yarcraft. I got my new boat last year, and I usually keep mine for 2-3 years, but it's a 219 Yarcraft with that 400 V10. And I don't know what's going on with it, but it keeps getting faster. And it was on Thursday. Yeah, Thursday I took out of the access, and I had like half a tank of gas. I'm like, not a lot of people talk about how fast these boats go. I don't care. I'm going to say it. I got that thing going 73 miles an hour by myself, yeah. Half a tank of gas and a bunch of stuff. I was like, holy cow. But anyways, that's just the fun part of it for me now. But so like, you know, practice was kind of iffy for us. We had multiple areas and spots that produced what we thought were the right fish. And we thought these weights were going to be down. We were like, geez, you go get a 26 inch average, you might win this thing. So wake up. Kate did get in the boat on Friday a little bit. And I you know, she got to catch a couple smaller fish. I looked over a lot of spots, but, you know, we get to the access and I told Kate, I'm like, I'm just gonna go have fun. I kind of have some areas I think that are going to have a ton of pressure. I know good areas are gonna have a lot of pressure. And we're just going to kind of go through them, find the fish, catch them, and just keep on rolling and make adjustments as we go. It laid out exactly how I planned. So my first spot that I've fished a little bit in years past, but I was shallower. I looked at it multiple times on Thursday and Friday, and I never really saw anyone fishing it. And usually there's a couple of really good people that fish that tournament that are usually looking in there. I never saw them there. I'm like, all right, well, and when I went through there, it was loaded and I didn't catch one. I let them be. I knew what they were. So I'm like, well, I'm going to go there first. So I roll up in there and I'm last for takeoff. Like, so there's, you know, 85 other boats already taken off. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, there's probably going to be, you know, one or two boats, you know, on that spot, that little strip. And, wasn't a boat on it. Actually, not far from there was a buddy of mine. I'm not teamed up with, but I grew up fishing with him and his buddy were fishing there just off to the side of it. I'm like, all right. Went around them and they were going to stay there. I kind of tell and went through there. I saw two fish the day before. There was probably 30 whales on it. So I'm like, oh no, that's not good. But we caught both of those. And I think it was like a 22 and a 23 incher. But so, and that's how it goes. So then you make adjustments, right? I'm not going to go back over that again. It's a very visible spot. It's actually like the weeds are really shallow there and the fish were in the edge of the weeds, but more times than less, those ones are pushed out a little bit because the weeds don't go as deep in that little spot. But not far from there, there's a shallow like cabbage bed. It's like 12 foot deep or something like that, and it's like right down the way, and it's more of a public spot or a community spot. But I'm like, man, there's only three boats on it, and one of them's way over there and the other two are way off the end of it. I'm like, right where I caught my fish in practice, I think we got a 27, a 25, and a 23 in there in practice. I'm like, that spot's kind of open. I'm like, all right, well. So I just put the trolling motor on 10 power and started boogieing over there and looking as I went. So that was kind of our second spot. And we pull up in there, and there's, you know, good fish, but not like the right size I'm really looking for. So we cycled through like some 23s, 24s. And then I'm going, and we're going slow in here because it's kind of a small area, maybe like the size of a football field or so. And I remember it was like yesterday, because it wasn't that far long ago, but I panned like, oh, there's one, two, three, four. There's a school of like 23s. I'm like, it's not casting those. I went a little bit further. I'm like, oh boy, there's a goober on the bottom. I threw on them, or no, Kate threw on that one. And I just watched it creepy crawl up, smoked it, and it was a 27 incher. And it got caught in the cabbage multiple times. It was a mess. And there was a boat got close to us, which was totally fine. Yeah, so that was our first wave fish on the carbs, that 27 incher. And so I'm like, all right, let's keep on looking around. It kind of got a little, there wasn't a lot of boats on it, but it's just like everyone was working it slow and we were kind of going the same way. And I'm like, you know, I rolled in one way downwind, and when I kind of got to the area I liked, I'm like, all right, I'm going to go back upwind and angle it off to new fish. But I was kind of like, I was cutting those guys off because it's kind of like an open area, you can fish wherever. I'm like, I don't want to be, I'm not seeing the right fish anymore. I don't want to cut anyone off and like just wrench on these 23 inchers because that's all I was seeing after we caught that 27. I'm like, all right, let's make an adjustment, Kate. We're going to go to some reference points from practice in a different area, which is a very community area. A lot of people know about it, but we're going to go there and it's like mid morning now. I'm like, everyone, you know, there's probably 20 boats in there in the morning and they've already kind of worked over all the really good stuff. And what ends up happening after that, guys will make adjustments, right? They usually end up going shallower and starting to chase fish up shallow. I'm like, I could kind of see over there. So I'm like, I'm going to go over there now because boats seem to be congregating over in this area. And I bet you I could go out and slip off the edge of those weeds and see them like I, you know, feel like I have, I'm going to be seeing them just poking their nose out. We roll in there and that's exactly what it was. Everyone's kind of pushed into these shallow weeds, like being super sneaky, trying to catch these fish. And there were fish being caught in there, but roll up in there, right? Where I think it was like a 27 inch, and it was 27 inch was caught in practice. Went around that little tip. And just like I said, just off the edge of those high wall weeds, I saw a goober sitting right under it. And I pitched at that one, popped it. It was a 26 and a half inch or so, our second fish on the card. Yeah, so then we had a couple teammates in there and we could see what they were kind of doing and all that. And I'm like, well, I'm not going to go way up in there and there's 20 boats in there. So I kind of went around the edge trying to find more of those ones just poking their heads out of the weeds. And we caught some, again, 23s, 24s because they were visible easy. But I didn't see many more of that kind of fish. So I'm like, and then we went by Randy Topper, watched him catch a 24 incher. I'm like, well, I'm not going around that corner. So I rolled out and we didn't see much more. I'm like, all right, let's make another adjustment. And I said this, I'm like, well, we rolled down this spot, we caught a 26 and whatever half. I'm like, let's do it again. Let's go to my next reference point. So I went to a spot in practice where I think I caught a 20, yeah, it was a 26 and three quarters. So I rolled over there. It took me a while to get to that one, but it was the same thing then. We rolled up on that spot, bloop, 26 and a half. So number three on the card. And then it got tough for a little bit, and it took me a long time. There's so many fish in this area. Like a lot of people could contest this. Like that lake's got just a ridiculous amount of fish in it, and there's a lot of 21 to 23 inches that you know are they'll bite quite often. So it distracted me a little bit, but I'm like, all right, we got 300 cards that are really what we want. We only need two more, you know, even if those are 25 inchers. So I was kind of trying to work through some of those pods that you could see some bigger fish in it. But, you know, we caught multiple of the smaller ones because they would get to it before the big one. And then once you catch one out of the school, you know, they kind of disperse and it's like, oh, now they're all goofy. But I'm trying to think now because I rolled up a little farther. Yeah, then I ended up going up a little ways and and it took me a while to get, it probably took me an hour to cycle through a bunch of those fish. And finally, I found one that was by itself right on the edge of those weeds in about 14 feet of water. I can see him just sitting there wagging his tail on the edge of the weed by himself. And there's other schools around him, but he was there. But we were able to get one right onto him. Now it's a 27 incher, I think. And now we're talking, we're like 1-2 o'clock in the day. It's like 2 o'clock. And now we kind of got into desperation mode. So I went by a couple other reference points down this little area. And I was just seeing more of that same stuff. I'm like, we need a freaking 30 and we might have a chance to win this thing. So that's when I made that choice. I'm like, all right, I'm going to go just try to find one chasing smelt or, you know, a floater or even some of the deeper ones. And we tried multiple fish, but a lot of those are pike. I mean, we chased them, and there's other boats doing it too. And we were kind of bouncing around, and you can't hardly get them on the fish because those fish chasing those smelt, they don't sit still. Like, they're just moving all the time. And I feel like a lot of them are pikes. We catch a lot of pike doing it, but there are big walleyes that are doing it too. But, and then I'm like, I got to get out of here because boats are going to start rolling through and whatnot. And I went to a little different area, and we spent 20 minutes in there. And then, you know, like I said, with like 15 minutes to spare, I saw that one that was floating down there, and worked them up and got that 28 incher. So that's kind of how the whole day went. You know, as far as like Kate and I working together, we're very chill in the boat. I mean, for the most part, like Kate, and people can contest this, being a co-angler or the partner that's not, you know, dialed in, sitting on the foot pedal or however remote or the pole and watching that live scope and being the person casting, having to cast around someone is very difficult. Very difficult. I'm sure you've done it as well.
Oh yeah.
And hats off to Kate. You know, she doesn't make every cast, but, and I don't either, but she does a really good job of casting around me. And that's kind of how we plan the day. I was like, that's how we do a lot of our tournaments. The Osakis tournament, we do the same thing. We won that one 3 times. Didn't win it this year, but I kind of usually try to make that first cast. And if I miss, or if I don't feel good about something, or if, you know, whatever ends up happening, she's right there ready to go. And a lot of times she ends up catching a lot of them because she's pretty dialed in on those casts.
Hearing you talk about, you know, Pokegama's full of fish, you know, and getting bit from the sounds of it. Like, if you were just going to go out fun fishing, it doesn't sound like Pokegama is a tough bite from a, like, just catching a nice looking walleye standpoint. But I guess if I'm interpreting it right, you know, everybody talking about it being a tough bite, they're probably, would I say it correctly? If you're just speaking on those big tourney grade fish, is that what the tough bite is? Is that what everybody's talking about?
Yeah, that's the tough part. I mean, because the weights weren't horrible, right? I mean, there's a ton of 30 pound bags,
which, yeah, that's excellent.
Yeah, I mean, that's really good. But so what it was those big ones were tough to catch. I mean, I'm looking at the standings now, and there was 27 teams with 30 plus pound bags. So, I mean, that's a good bite on most lakes. I mean, that's what I'm saying. There's a heavy, heavy class of those 22 to 24s and maybe 25. So, and they're a lot more apt to bite. You know, I don't know what it was with the big girls, but they were just stingy. I'm sure multiple teams had multiple, you know, 26, 27, 28 inch fish to look at their bait, but to get them to bite, that was a tough part. You know, I did have some, you know, our team did have some, I guess, tricks up our sleeve in certain ways that I can't really get into, but I mean, a lot of it also came down to just, like I was saying, when I was going down those lines, trying to find those big ones to get in front. I casted and Kate casted so many darn times at those fish. You know, you just have to keep going and going and going, because part of it was too, it's like, you know, say one out of every 100 fish that's over 26 inches is going to eat, you know, because there's probably that many out there. You just have to get in front as many fish as you can. And then it's like, I don't know if it's just experience or like, you know, other guys can test, but you can kind of catch a mood of a fish too when you're watching them on live scope. Like, you can see like how they're reacting. Like, there's multiple times where I'm like, I cast on one, it looked at it, I'm like, nope, that one, nope, we're moving on.
Yeah, like, you can tell it's not going to eat, so why waste your time?
Exactly. Yeah. So I just kept on rolling, and, you know, a lot of guys do that, I'm sure, but it's, you know, that's just one of the things that comes with experience. Like, it's like deer hunting, right? It's almost like we're not fishing as much anymore, we're hunting. And, you know, like, just like when you're deer hunting, you know, the wind's wrong, this is wrong, you get a feel for that kind of stuff, and
yeah,
you make adjustments accordingly. You have to.
I also, one thing that I find really, really sort of fun about your story of your tournament day, and it's a 1 day shootout, right? So like, there's that's a big factor in strategy, but I like that, you know, you kind of had a bit of a plan in your head, you know, fishing spots that were, you know, smaller spots that were kind of your own deal versus spots that you were going, you know, you're going into like that third spot where, you know, it's a community spot. And it's like, a lot of people would think maybe a community spot, you better have a good boat draw and you better get there first. And by the time it loads up, that spot's going to be done. But I think that's very savvy, like, you know, and that probably plays a part in lots of different tournaments. But I find that to be definitely intriguing, you know, just from like a strategical standpoint, but you got to stay efficient. How do you feel like, give me some tips and tricks on being able to fish that much water, that many spots in an 8-hour day, like you're talking, and the diversity of how the spots look. I mean, you know, like how do you stay efficient doing all this?
I mean, it's not easy. I mean, I don't know if there's any like, you know, like, I don't know, pot of gold at the end of the rainbow with it. It's just, I mean, it's experience. And we just, you know, I've been with Garmin 6-7 years now, and I've had all the gadgets and all the stuff since they've been out, starting with the PS30. But I think we talked about that last time, but it's just like a second. I don't know how you, so I don't even, like, sometimes I find myself, like, this is mostly in practice, but I'll find myself kind of zoning out looking at, you know, the Garmin, the screen itself. And it's just like I think I just got such a keen eye, and all of our team does. We've got a keen eye for what we're looking for, you know, and that, and like, it's not just in the size, but the attitude. So I think we're really fishing in that, just because we've been doing it for so long. I've been doing it for so long. I know what I'm looking for, and I feel confident in that. And that just all comes from time on the water, time chasing big fish. And Fishing the AIM series has trained my mind to be big fish fishy, right? If that makes sense. You know, and we fish a lot of the same lakes, and a lot of Minnesota's lakes set up very similar. But as far as equipment goes, as far as the tackle and all that kind of stuff, I mean, I run the same JT rod. I got, for my bobber rod, I run the JTX 7'9" medium light. So it's a stiffer rod. And I feel it's a stiffer and a little more nimble rod, in my opinion. Not nimble, but like, it's just stiffer. Like, so I'm able, it's just what I like and how I like my bobber rod, and I can cast, you know, 60 feet and pretty much hit a bucket every time, depending on wind. Wind's always the factor. And that's another thing, you know, for the game day, it blew in the morning, and it was tough to get good casts on fish and not get, you know, your bobber knotted up and whatnot. And then, like, in the morning, you couldn't do a jig and a trawler or a jig, and we did tried some fat heads and whatnot. And you couldn't really cast that far. So you get too close to the fish, they spook. But yeah, most of it's all on bobbers, and like just being efficient with, like, I run mono, and I feel really comfortable casting mono braid. There's that new like shooter braid out there and whatnot. I tried it, and I just feel so confident knowing I can cast 50, 60 feet and hit it right on that fish's nose or right behind it and drag him into it. So I think that's a big deal. You know, if you can cast to where you want to cast it, present that bait in front of the fish in a very quick manner, and discover this thing's going to eat or it's not, and then make that decision, like, I don't think it's going to eat, I'm moving on. Or you get it to look at it, and you're like, wow, that's a 20-inch, or why am I even throwing at it? Keep on going.
Ooh, and that's that I couldn't do.
It's a daily thing too. Yeah. Like, I have to train myself every time I go out. Like this one, I knew 22 inches, casting at 22 and 23 inches anymore wasn't going to do it. Wasn't going to cut it, you know? And, you know, I'll be honest, Kate, you know, in the boat, she's like, oh, I'll cast at those ones. I'm like, no. I don't want, let's just keep on going. We're going to find a bigger one. So that's part of it too. Like, that goes right back into knowing my electronics and what I'm looking for.
And I think about too, like wind and boat control is a thing on my mind. You know, I fish the Sakakawea a lot, and it's like wind is always out there, but like, what's the wind speed or sort of the threshold, or maybe it's wind direction or whatever. Like, how do you decide maybe going with the wind and letting the wind kind of push you and help you and do a little bit of work for you, versus like, how often are you, you know, intentionally kind of going into the wind, you know, just to kind of keep, you know, your compass pointed at the fish or whatever, like, and if the wind is kind of hitting you broadside, you know, into a spot, if you're trying to stay in and around a weed line, I'm just sort of curious about some of those things from like a boat control standpoint. I need some advice just for my own fun fishing. Like, I don't even need you to tell me exactly why it makes sense from a tournament standpoint, but I just need some help with this.
Yeah. I mean, I'm kind of guy, and, I like it when it blows, to be honest with you. I'd rather have it blowing like crazy than flat calm or just a light breeze. And the reason that is because it's tough. It is absolutely the most frustrating and tough thing. Like you're saying on Scott, we were out there, same stuff was going on, and it is not easy. But I like that because it's not easy for anyone then, right? The nuances of it, I mean, the boat plays a big role. You know, Joe runs a 622 Ranger, which is a tub, and that thing sits flat in the water in 3-footers. I don't get it. I don't know how it does it, but that boat, you know, does a really good job of sticking in the water, and it's a lot slower, you know, in regards to your trolling speed because you're pulling such a big boat and it drains your batteries faster. But like my Yarcraft, mine doesn't sit flat in the water as much, but mine's a lot more nimble, and it tracks really, really well. Like there's something with that boat and like how I can track on fish. And like I like to kind of position myself sometimes and like, all right, there's a good one. Let's, you know, and when it's blowing like crazy and say I'm, you know, going like downwind, because I'll typically, if it's really blowing, I'll go downwind because it's just so tough on the batteries to try to go into 3-footers all day. So I'll be going downwind and, you know, I'll spot one at, you know, I put my stuff usually like 100 feet or 120 feet if, you know, I'm looking for big ones, you know, in an area where you can, they're visible. And then I'll position myself. In some cases, if you see them soon enough and you're not moving too fast, I don't run those like power pull slow you down or the trolling motors in the back. I'll try to just get on that fish as soon as I feel I can get a good cast on that fish. I try to get a good cast on that fish because you don't know, especially in these Minnesota lakes, if that fish is going to be there if you go around them and try to position downwind of them to get a good cast on them. So it's really a case-by-case basis. You know, so I guess the best reference I can give is like Mille Lacs. When we were on Mille Lacs, like last year, when we took second in that one, that was a huge blow day. We were in my boat and we went into them on this break line. And it was like, it was 2-footers, but it's blowing so hard. And I had that Nate in the front of the boat with me. Otherwise, trolling motors coming out and all that stuff. And we just tracked on them and we cast like 10 times to get on one fish. I mean, it was not easy. But then once I'm like looking at my app, you know, for Amped Outdoors to see how much trolling battery life I have, I'm like, Ron, we're not going to make it. So at that point I'm like, all right, let's motor up, go downwind. And, you know, that one, I mean, you see them, you cast on them right away, try to get a bobber on them or jigging a crawler or jigging them, whatever you're doing. You know, if you can't get it on them, you veer off of them, try to stay away, reposition downwind and cast on them. And hopefully they're still there, you know.
You know, another thing that I get questions on all the time that I think would be appropriate right now for you is like, you know, seeing a fish and kind of judging the size. Because I think anybody that's ever, you know, gotten into the forward sonar game and fishes anywhere where there is, you know, big fish around, you know, it seems like I've had plenty of times where a fish surprised me how big it was. Like, you know, a fish looked like just like the same size on the graph as it did. The last one I caught is a 20-incher, and then this one's a 24-incher. I feel like maybe there's like angles and things like that that play a factor. Like a big fish doesn't always just look super giant to me. Like, is there some things that, like, in your mind, like, do you know, how quickly are you always detecting these are big fish, or is this a situation where, you know, maybe sometimes you're just sort of comfortable with a little bit of collateral damage where, like, a fish doesn't look big right away, you're already moving on with the thought that, you know, well, maybe you're wrong about that one, but you can be wrong a few times in the day. Like, I'm just sort of curious about like detecting the size of the fish. Like,
yeah, I mean, it really varies lake to lake too. It seems like it's weird. Like, I guess I'll reference, you know, Bakega monster just there, obviously, but like those fish, it wasn't super easy to tell like a 23 to a 25. Like, I don't think you can actually truly tell a 23. And the reason is too, because they're like tubes there. They look more like lake trout than they do walleyes. They're just like big tubes. So even those 23s on, you know, say on otter, if you see that 23 on otter tail, you're thinking it's a 26 inch or 27 inch all day, just because they show up, there's a bigger return there because they're beefier bodies. But so, I mean, as far as being able to like judge the size of the fish, one thing I do in practice, like when I get to a new lake or something like that, and this is a good tip for people that really like, if they're trying to chase some big fish. So like these weed edge fish, if you can get tight to them, and you can get tight to them without them spooking sometimes, but like if you're set out to 100 feet and you see one, you're like, ooh, that might be a good one. But you're like, I want to see how big he is first. Zoom your graph in to 50 feet, and then it'll take those increments if you have the grid overlay on your live scope screen. If you zoom back to 50 feet, it'll take those grid overlays from 10-foot increments to 5-foot increments. So then you can get in closer to that fish, and I'll even zoom in further sometimes. And if they're showing up nice and there's not like good water clarity and all that, and it's not fuzzy and you got it dialed in, you can actually like just keep panning on them with your, you know, your pole or your foot thing or whatever. And you can kind of eventually see, okay, he is over 24 inches long because of those, excuse me, not 5-foot grids. It goes to 2-foot grids at 50 feet. So you can see, all right, he's a little longer than 2 feet. So that's one way I like to do it sometimes. And in perfect scenario conditions, like when you have really good water, especially like Mille Lacs, the fish show up like just beautifully. So you can tell at 100 foot, you flash, okay, there's a school of like, you know, whatever, 20 inches, because there's tons of them in that lake. And you pan over and there's one mama sitting 20 feet off to the left of them. Like, oh, there you go. So a lot of times I'm referencing, like I'll catch fish out of schools, you know, and then I'll see, okay, that's that size. And then you see one next to it off the side of that school, obviously looks bigger than that school of fish. So it's just, it's kind of lake by lake, case by case. It really depends on water clarity. Like Osakis, which we were on not that long ago, you can't hardly tell on there because it's like clear water, but it's like a slough and there's like bugs floating around and just stuff everywhere. So the fish don't show up well at all. So then it turns into a bit of a guessing game. But yeah, I'd say the best tip is if you're wanting to try to learn it a little better, zoom in on a fish, get close to it, you know, confirm it's 24 inches or bigger, and then maybe back off of it, go back to whatever distance you like to set your graph to, 7,500 feet, and then look at it again. I'm like, just keen. So it's just my eyes been very keened in to knowing what size fish are and lake to lake as well. It's really tough on bottom, like deep, deep bottom fish, like bottom gremlins. Those ones are really tough to tell along there because there's not a lot of return and it's kind of goofy, but those are the really tricky bites.
That is excellent, dude. Like that definitely gives me a whole bunch to go on next time I'm out on the water. Definitely to help learn those electronics. Cause that's that efficiency piece that, you know, for me, like, I'm never going to like, you know, join a tournament circuit or anything like that. But even just fun fishing, like that's what I'm trying to do. Like, I just want to, you know, I just like learning that stuff. That's a phenomenal piece of advice, man.
That's another big thing with it too, is like, like Nate's a full-time guide, Randy guides part-time, Dylan guides part-time, and like time on the water, you know, and these, like, you know, Max and John and those guys, they're out all the time fishing as many terms as they can. Well, I mean, the biggest reason of success is experience. I mean, in my opinion, it's all about the time you put into it. Like, I don't fish as much as I used to. I don't guide as much as I used to, but, you know, I got a few trips this year, and like, I just take Tristan, my boy, oh, he's 6 years old now, and he's getting really close to being able to jump up on that butt seat and go chasing down himself. Like,
that's awesome.
We work on lakes around here that are like, you know, we don't fish a lot, but there's, you know, I'm in the Alexandria Lakes area, and there are whales around here. I went out the other day. And, you know, just chasing them around, just keeping that eye and just keeping keen to what you're looking for. And one thing you said about like the nuances of like seeing what that fish does and the size reference, that's another great way to get a reference. Cause a lot of times like walleyes are pretty stagnant in the water. Like they're just sitting there like just zoned out, you know, nobody knows what they're doing. You've seen that a million times too. And it's like, if you can get that fish to react, and I did this multiple times during the Graha, like I said before, a cast on it. I saw that thing turn and look at, I mean, no, get it, I just pull it out of there. Like I know, you know, it's not, but that's just comes from time knowing. And then, you know, and then just those days of practice, seeing what size class fish it is. Every lake's a little different. You got to just get an understanding of, you know, figuring out what the bigger fish look like or the eaters, if that's what you're chasing, and the schools of them per lake. Cause every lake seems to be a little different how they show up on the graph. Most are the same, but sometimes it's a little different. So yeah, it's pretty wild.
Dude, that stuff is so, I appreciate all that stuff. And it's, you know, for you and Kate to catch a 28 incher that put you into the top five, I mean, second place, like, phenomenal, super hard tournament, but in the last minutes of the tournament, you know, every little efficient thing that you did throughout the day, you know, every 22 incher that you decided not to throw at or catch on purpose really like gave you the opportunity to catch that big one at the end, that you weren't 5 minutes behind in your schedule. You know, like that stuff is so impactful in these tournaments, and that's what you need. Unless you fish a tournament or unless you do something competitive like that, it's really hard to sort of, you know, understand how meaningful those efficiencies are throughout the day. And you're fishing a lake that, you know, you're not fishing like the prime bite windows. And maybe that was like another question I should have asked you is like, but something that we talk about all the time is like the tournaments, you know, you guys launch, or, you know, at 7 o'clock in the morning. It's been daylight for like a couple hours this time of year. And you're done at 3, you know, you don't get to fish the evening bite. Right. So it's like, if people don't fish tournaments, you know, most people fun fish just, you know, walleyes, it's like morning and evening, right? It's like, you know, but you guys are doing that daytime deal and you got to stay efficient, and you gave yourself a chance to catch a big one at the end. I mean, that the efficiency piece is always, always, always an important thing.
Yeah. When it came into play there too, like I went the direction of I'm going to spot hop, right? I didn't end up hitting as many spots as I want to and I didn't have to, which is great. But like there, it was in the back of my mind because like you're saying, they're like, yeah, we're fishing daytime. We don't have that, you know, that twilight to fishing the morning, the evening. But there are bite windows throughout the day, majors, minors, you know, temperature changes, wind changes. You know, I don't really pay a ton of attention to that stuff. I try to sometimes depending on the bite, but like it was in the back of my mind because like there's a few spots on Pakegama where that's where it's won, right? Or that's where the big fish are at. And it was in the back of my mind, just grind it out there all day. Because if you're not there during that bite window and you're sitting on a spot that the biggest fish there are 25 inches, you can't win it. So that was in the back of my mind. There are guys that did that. But like I said, it just worked out for me. I decided to go and just hit reference points from practice, as many as I could, and I didn't have to go that far. But, oh, the bite windows throughout the day. Because during the week, you know, I wasn't there all week, but like some of the teammates were there much longer, and there did seem to be like a certain morning bite window. I think it was like, you know, 9 to 11. Like all of a sudden the waypoints would start coming through the group. Like, okay, there's obviously a 9 to 11 bite. And then there was one at like 2 to 4, you know, and there'd be a bunch of texts coming across at that time. But game day, I was watching the minors and majors and the weather and stuff, and it wasn't playing out to be a good day. I was like, oh, this is going to be tough. But I thought they were really bitey on game day. I did not expect it to be that good. So I could bet, if I don't know when this is coming out, but as soon as this comes out and people want to go to Pakegama and catch fish, it's going to be crazy. Because I bet you I saw with the live scope over 4,000 some fish, you know, in one day. Like a person go to Pakegama right now with a bottom bouncer and a crawler harness and drag weed edges and probably have just an amazing time with like kids and family or just fun fishing without live scope. When they're biting, that lake's going to be insane.
I think it was, didn't they do good one year or win it one year?
Yeah. Yeah. They won it.
And then they filmed a show, or it was on YouTube.
Yeah.
And they had some screenshots. They were like slip bobber, and I was like, yeah, you know, so here I am, this casual fan, and I'm listening to these tournament anglers talk about how finicky these Pokegama fish are, and I'm just in my head, I'm just thinking, wow, what an incredible, you know, how impressive is it that these guys are talking about how tough it is, but there's all these big weights, and they're catching 4 or 5 fish a day, and you know, or getting six bites or whatever, and then, you know, Dylan and Joe, didn't they won it a couple of years ago, and then I think, didn't they film like a Midwest Outdoors piece or whatever it was, something like that.
Yeah, Dylan, I think Dylan did one for Lund.
And then they're showing like the live scope screenshots, and it's like he's throwing a slip bobber on a school of like 40 fish. And I was like, hold on a second, this is what I need. Like, this is what I need to kind of like paint, it paints the picture. Now that, like, so it's not like anybody's being dishonest. Like, I can understand from a tournament perspective, for somebody that's putting together a winning strategy, like that's really tough. Like, it's a really tough thing to put together. But the lake, the way the lake sets up, so fertile, tons of forage. In fact, different patterns going on all day, probably throughout, you know, the whole season. You know, there's different patterns going on with the shallow and the deep stuff. And it's like, that stuff's really, really cool. I think that that definitely adds a lot to the story of that lake. But anyway, yeah. Tyler, I know we're kind of on a time crunch here, but I really appreciate it. Hats off to you and Kate, second place finish, and Joe, and Dylan being, close buddies of yours. I mean, that was just such a cool 1-2 punch there. And I'm glad we were able to connect and get this story on that, because yeah, a lot of people pay attention to that. And I like the way you put it. It's like the Graja is kind of like the Gov Cup of Minnesota. And I would concur with that. Like, I'm a big fan of the Gov Cups out here, the South mm-hmm. Dakota, you know, the Western reservoirs that we got out here, you know, the Montana, North Dakota deal. They're a big deal. You know, there's such a big deal. There's no more bragging rights anywhere, you know, than those tournaments. And I think that's true. Like that Minnesota, that Graja over there, it's a great cause. Everybody loves that. The vibes are, it seem like they're just super elite over there. Everybody just loves being there, and that makes it look fun. You know, I like seeing mm-hmm. people having fun. I like the tournament anglers talking about it being a good time and a good tournament. It's catch, photo, release, good for the fish. So all that stuff, like everything around that tournament just seems super, super cool. And then just how competitive, you know, it is to get a top five or a top 10 and get your boat pulled, you know, in the parade there to be up on stage. Like, all that stuff is just, I think that stuff is super awesome. So hats off, man, on a phenomenal finish for you and Kate. And yeah, man, great story, dude. And yeah, we both kind of got to go pick up our kids from daycare at this point, Tech. Yep. So yeah, dude, well, we can sign it off. And unless there's something else, whatever, eating at you, let me know. Otherwise, we can sign this one off.
Yeah, no, it's all pretty good. Yeah, no, it was just a great experience. I will say one last thing. I mean, so sorry, last little thing, like the last few days have been racking my brain about, because you mentioned Joe and Dylan, good buddies, they won it, which super pumped for them. Like, because in the catch, holder, release is like, it's not like you throw it in your live, well, you have to make decisions. You're holding that fish there, you're setting on the board, I'm like, all right, it's 26 and a half inches. Like, I thought to myself multiple times, I'm like, man, if that one would have just been a little longer, you know, or if I might have held it a little different or something like that, I could have, you know, getting me, I was 0.15 pounds away from getting first place. But Joe and Dylan had a bit of a mix up during the tournament on a picture, and they had to weigh a 25 incher instead of a 26 and a half. I have to keep telling myself that those guys, no matter what, I mean, we caught, we fished super clean. But Dylan, no matter what, even if that 28-incher, because I rushed that 28-incher, and, you know, if I would have, like, just maybe moved it a little bit, it probably went over the line, maybe would have won it. But Dylan and Joe are ultimately the winners. They had the best day of fishing. And my hat's off to those guys for putting together the bag they did as well. So
yeah, that's an interesting point that you made about the aims, as far as, you know, to only have one hand on the fish in the picture for the length, you know, you're not pinching tails very well.
No.
With one hand on the fish. So, like, not that it's an inaccuracy, because it's fair, everybody, it's across the board, but I could definitely see where, you know, going down to the quarter inch on a lot of these fish, some of these fish might play ball really well on the bump board, and some not so much.
You know, and those Bakegama fish they're different animals, and it's tough to keep them stay there. But yeah, no, I like the new way of doing it. It just, it's the same for everybody. It's just, you know, people that fish the AIM series can, I usually don't do that. Like, Nate's usually the guy, my AIM partner, Nate Linegar, he holds the fish. I take the picture. This time I was holding the fish. Kate was taking the picture. So my brain's been racking about that. I keep telling myself, nope, Joe and Dylan, you know, technically speaking, they won. And they had a goof up on a big fish, which it happens to everybody. And,
so did they have a fish DQ'd, or did that fish just measure?
They caught like a skinny 26 and a half inches or 26 and a quarter. And they're trying to remember what they all had for, and they thought, oh, we're good. We have another 26 incher plus on the card. Well, it turned out, so they kind of did a quick picture, and I think Joe had his hand on the side of the fish, which you can't have two hands on the fish, you know, they took one picture, chucked, and then took the hero shot, chucked it out thinking they didn't need that fish. Well, they messed up, and they still had a 25 and like a quarter on the card, and they ended up having to weigh it.
So, oh, after man. The tournament,
yeah. After the tournament got done, Kate and I rolled up to Dylan out in the lake after the tournament was done. And I'm like, well, how'd you do, Dylan? And he's like, oh, how'd you do? And I said, we have like 41. He's like, 41 what? And I'm like, 41? I have to look. So I took a picture of the card. And I look at it and I say, 41.29. And Dylan goes, no way. We had 41.44. So we're like, oh, hopefully we get like 2-3 or, because we thought for sure someone would have a 45-pound bag. But
yeah, no, man, because last year, I'm looking at it, or I was looking at it here a hot second ago. Yeah, it's like 50 pounds has won it. 50-plus pounds has won it before. Yeah, yep, Randy Topper won with 51-2-1 last year.
Yeah, he had just like one of those.
So that's epic. Always in the back of your mind.
Always, because that lake has them. Colt Anderson, he got a 31.5-incher on game day, but I think that was the biggest one. But yeah, it's just... the lake was a little goofy. The big girls just were not eating, and they weren't even showing themselves out very well. They're there. We know they're there. They're just a little goofy. But no, all said and done, that Graja tournament's absolutely amazing. Appreciate you having me on the podcast, and it was a great time. But yeah, gonna run and grab the kids and then go do a little fishing this evening. So
there it is, man. Good stuff. Well, stay in touch, Tyler, and nice work. Good luck the rest of the way.
Thanks, buddy.
Later, man.